Hello, and a warm welcome to Upper Bottom, a refreshingly light-hearted sobriety podcast, taking an ambivalent look at giving up boozing for people who haven't hit rock bottom. My name's Ollie.
Hey, I'm Tess. We both gave up drinking in early 2023, and we found that our friends were so curious about sobriety journeys, we decided to start this podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Expect a splash of wisdom, a shot of honesty, and a chaser of curiosity each week as we feature embarrassing drinking tales, unusual observations, and expert interviews to try and make sense of sobriety.
So, for anyone rethinking their relationship with alcohol, please join us on Upper Bottom. We're living proof that getting sober doesn't have to be a bum deal.
Cheers! Hello, listeners. Thanks for tuning in to the latest episode of Upper Bottom. We're well into April now. How was your weekend, Cess?
Oh, it was a busy one. I've had the in-laws over from
Easter holidays, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and I've had the in-laws over. So we went to see the Lionesses on Friday night.
They were playing Sweden.
1-1.
It was a good timing, wasn't it?
It was. I think it was a draw that was good for everybody.
On and off the pitch.
Yeah, exactly. So that was really good. I have to say, though, Wembley, if you're listening, I'm sure you are, a bit disappointed on the no and low options available.
Oh, no.
Searched in vain for a non-alcoholic beer to have. In fact, the only non-alcoholic products they have were your usual sugary drinks, maybe a water. So it's really poor.
That's really bad. And, you know, 65,000 yeah. tickets sold as well. So there's a great opportunity lost there.
And a lot of people would have been driving.
Yeah.
Right. So I thought that was crazy. Really disappointing. So, yeah, I'm shaming you, Wembley, on air.
There is this opportunity at festivals,
yeah.
for example, or even in local bars and restaurants where things could be better.
Yeah. So I spent my £4 on a Sprite and then I had a cup of tea in the second half. But yeah, it was great. 1-1. And then it's been sort of fairly family orientated. But drum roll, Ollie, what did you do on Sunday?
Well, I managed to get myself around 13.1 miles of the London Landmarks half marathon. And it sounds very boastful to say, but I knocked a couple of minutes off my PB.
Even with a cold? You had a cold?
A bit of a sniffle, yeah. But that PB has stood since 2008.
So wow.
Rolling back the years. And I suspect that not drinking has a large part of that. But it's funny you mentioned, you get your goodie bags, you get your medal afterwards, you get your T-shirt that I'm never going to wear, especially this one. My God, it's garish. But, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, you can go and enjoy your beer now. And that's the kind of reaction, isn't it, that you get.
Yeah.
I didn't stop and say, well, actually, don't you know? Do you not listen to Upper Bottom? Do you not know who I am?
Next time around, you want a T-shirt. Perhaps we can sponsor you.
Well,
the podcast
yeah.
can sponsor you.
Well, yeah. But no, that felt really good. Great to get around. Just a great occasion.
Yeah.
There
were a lot of people.
Sun was shining. I think there were 19,000 people.
Goodness.
Came. Mm. This sounds boastful now, but 603rd.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
And I think I was 60-ish of my age group. So pretty pleased with that. If I didn't have a cold, goodness no, I probably would have won the thing.
Yeah. So listeners, this can happen to you in a year's time. You'd be running a half marathon, I'm sure.
We've got a lovely interview coming up with the co-founders of the World Alcohol Free Awards, just announced their results for the second year. Chris and Chrissy, that's on its way. But first, we're going to start with some booze news, aren't we, Cess?
This one's Guinness related. So following up from the Patrick's Day, St. Patrick's Day special we had a while back. This one is from The Guardian. So stout, sometimes thought of as the drink of older men in pubs, is finding a diverse audience. And it's not just Guinness that's boosting sales. So they're making the point that there's been an upswing in female drinkers as well.
Stout, I mean, it's famously got a lot of iron in it, hasn't it? So I wonder if that's anything to do with it.
But particularly no and low alcohol versions of stout. So, I mean, actually, this got me thinking. There's a couple of products that I've had recently from brewers that I'm happy to talk about live. So one is Nirvana, and they're a London-based company. They do a really good stout. And another one is Olenau Heineken. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And they're from Estonia. And every beer I've had from those guys has been amazing. But they also do a stout. And have you ever tried any of those peanut butter stouts?
No, they sound good though.
They're really good. I think when you're sort of, you're used to either the lagers or you're used to either the pale ales, I think a stout can provide something a little bit different, a little bit other. It's got that sort of bittery biscuitiness to it. But apparently there's a big move towards stout drinking. Did you know that apparently in Wales it is prescribed to pregnant mums?
Oh, well, there you go. Maybe it is an iron deficiency thing.
Yeah, I think it's the only, but it used to be the whole of the UK, but I think they still do in Wales. Now, whether that's the pregnant mums, probably not actually. Probably mum's breastfeeding.
Just after, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that is interesting. But some of the stats here, Waitrose said that stout sales had increased by 29% compared with the same time last year. Also noted a higher split of women buying the beer. 61% of the volume was bought by women. Gosh.
Here you go.
Maybe there is something there.
The fastest growing beer variety in the UK.
Gosh. My booze news is about the world's oldest man dying.
Oh, what's his name?
His name was Juan Vicente Perez, and he was from Venezuela. He died last week, aged 114. So wow. He was the oldest man, and he said that his elixir was very strong booze. So
it looks like some kind of cane spirit.
That's right. It's called aguardiente.
Aguardiente.
And it's a type of distilled alcoholic South American spirit, yeah, which is often made from sugarcane. And he reckoned that his longevity was down to having a good, healthy dose of this every day.
Yeah, I mean, that's great.
We can't recommend it on this pod, though.
Well done, Juan. There's always
Juan. Sorry.
There's always someone that mentions that their grandmother, like, smoked, like...
Yeah.
40 Super Kings every day, and they were like 140. But yeah, well, good on you, Juan. But as a bit of balance, the title of the world's longest living man, currently living, goes to Liverpool, and that's John Tinniswood. He's 111 days and 223 days old, and he puts his longevity down to fish chips on a Friday and regularly hiking when he was young, which we fully condone.
Yeah. So a bit of a mix there. No mention of alcohol for John. But good luck to you, John. Here's to being the world's oldest living man for much longer. Right. Should we speak to Chrissy and Chris?
Let's delve in to the World Alcohol Free Awards.
Fantastic. I just wanted to quickly flag that there's a bit of an echo on the first question for 2 and a bit minutes. We do solve the problem, so if it's off-putting, it's only for a short while. Please do persevere, because it's a good interview.
Thank you very much for joining us,
Chrissy and Chris. You are fresh from the latest results in the World Alcohol Free Awards, so we thought it'd be great to get you on the podcast to talk us through it, really. So, first question, what inspired you to establish the World Alcohol Free Awards, and what do you hope to achieve through this initiative?
I'll tell you how it started, if you like. So almost 2 years, probably almost to the day, spring 2022, and we were at London White Fair, and I'm a drinks journalist by profession generally. And I was asked to do a load of talks on stages with people from different parts of the drinks industry. So from the on-trade, from the off-trade, from supermarkets, from independent retailers. And at the end of every single talk with these people, I asked them the same question, which was, what's the big trend that you see coming down the line for the next 3 or 4 years? And this being a wine fair, I was expecting them all to say, whatever, rosé or orange wine, whatever it was. And every single one of them, independently, on separate occasions, said low and no alcohol. And equally obviously, during the course of these conversations, it became obvious that they really didn't know much about this area at all, didn't understand it. So they knew it was a trend, they knew it was happening, but they didn't get it. They were a bit scared of it, I think. And I talked to Chrissy, who I knew was doing and had been doing a lot of work in this space for a while. And I said, is there a competition for this? Because that's the kind of thing that would really help people. People don't know what to look for. They don't know what to buy. They don't know what's good and what's bad. That's precisely what competitions are for. And she said, no, there isn't really one. There's the IWSC, which kind of does low and no. But there's nothing that's completely dedicated to alcohol free. And I said, right, we should just set one up. We should just do it. Like, you're the expert in this space. We've worked together on competitions for donkey's years. Let's just jump in and do it. You know, the time is right. Seize the moment and all that. So we did. That's kind of how it all happened. Two years ago. So it came out of the back, ironically, out of an alcohol fair. But it just seemed like they were talking about it and they knew it was happening. So we just thought the time is right. The world needs it. And with Christy, I've got the right person to help make sense of it. So let's just go and do it.
So Christy, it was an easy decision for you to get involved in this.
Absolutely. I love judging. I love drinks, but I really love the world of non-alcoholic drinks. So my background is that I was head of wine for a big international restaurant company for 18 years. And I've always been interested in what's happening. And exactly as Chris said, nowhere is it more interesting and is more happening than in alcohol-free drinks, both no and low. We're interested in the no, if you like, the alcohol-free. And I got very involved in these drinks about 5 years before the conversation with Chris, trying to do something, you know, really innovative in the restaurant company I worked for. And I knew that it was really difficult to do. You know, I actually was involved in developing some products, sourcing products from around the world. And I knew that there were really interesting things, but that people just didn't know about them, and they didn't know what they could drink if they didn't want alcohol, and they didn't know what the choices were. And it was, for me, an absolute no-brainer to say, yes, let's get all the drinks in and try them and actually see what they're doing well and you know, shine a light on the ones that are doing really well. So that was motivation, I think.
Yeah, a lot of our listeners, when we talk about no and non-alcoholic products, when it comes to wines, they say they're too sweet. When it comes to beers, there's a critique of a lack of depth or body, a feeling that they're a bit thin. When judging alcohol-free drinks, what are the key criteria you consider, and how do you ensure a fair and comprehensive evaluation process?
There's two parts to that, really. There's the criteria, and then there's how we ensure, you know, the judging is sort of fair and skilled enough. So in terms of the criteria, I come from a background where most people who work with alcoholic drinks have quite a lot of training in their careers. They will have done qualifications, and I'm just the same. You know, I've studied wine, I've studied sake, I've studied spirits, I've been through tasting exams. So I approach the liquid, if you like, from quite a rigorous approach, you know, looking at the aroma, looking at the palate, as we call it, which is both the flavour and the texture, how it feels. Is it balanced? Does it last a long time in the mouth? Does it have a good texture? And then very much layered over that, do I want to drink it? Is it appealing? Is it refreshing? Is it, you know, something that makes me want to drain the glass and maybe have another one? So there's the kind of objective, you know, these are the things we look for, and there's the subjective, you know, we want it to be nice, we want to like it, want it to have some drinkability and appeal, and we look for both of those things. In terms of making sure that that's what actually happens, it comes down to the judges, and this is it's a tricky area, because everybody is interested in these drinks, but very few people have much experience or knowledge around these drinks. So we spend a good chunk of the time we spend preparing for the competition is finding the right judges. And we have judges from around the world. We had judges from about 7 countries, I think, this year, from North America, Europe, and the UK. We're hoping to spread that even further next year. But we look for people who work with these drinks or write about them extensively, or maybe they're people who are buyers and buy alcoholic drinks but have put real effort into developing a good range of non-alcoholic drinks. So that it's really key to us that the people are right. But we also put some effort into trying to improve their skills. So the first year we ran the competition, we hooked up with someone in America who had developed a training course about non-alcoholic beer, and we provided that free for all of our judges. This year we did some video recordings about how to taste and what to look for, but we also try and educate our judges about the trends and the things that are happening so that they aren't judging with last year's palate, because you have to move, you have to keep yourself very up to date in this space because things change very quickly.
Yeah, that's great. And I must say, I've just last week celebrated 1 year of sobriety, and the thing that's kept me going is the range of, alcohol-free or low alcohol beers and increasingly wines as well. I don't think I could have done it 5 years ago, actually, because there weren't things like this, around that helped point the direction for people who are looking for grown-up drinks, I suppose, that aren't alcohol. But Chris, looking at the most recent results, they came out, the end of March. Are there any really interesting winners for you that you could tell our listenership about?
I think one of the takeaway trends, I suppose, developments that we've seen is, bear in mind this is only our second competition, is that things which would might have got a gold in the first year may not have got a gold in the second year, because Chrissy's alluded to this already, things are developing all the time in this space. So things are moving incredibly quickly. So people who had a drink which stood out as being really good 2 or 3 years ago, if they put it to the test now against their peers, they might find that actually it's not where they think it is, that actually things are moving up all the time, which comes back to your story, Ollie, actually, which is that it's a lot easier not to drink alcohol now than it would have been 5 or 6 years ago. And on the evidence of this year's competition, getting easier all the time. I think there's maybe 2 areas, I think, which were standout good, where we're seeing some really interesting products. I think one would probably be aperitifs, those bitter style aperitifs for Definite are really good. Mm-hmm. And we saw a lot of those, a lot of kind of Campari type or Negroni wannabe kind of drinks, and Aperol type drinks, a lot of those. And generally speaking, the standard of those was very good. There's people working on them who are clearly refining what they're doing all the time. And that they're a really exciting area. And one, I think, where, alcoholic cocktails they're at least as good as the alcoholic versions. I think another one maybe is vermouths. We saw a lot of really good sort of fortified style wines, didn't we, Chrissy? And you picked up on this in the course of judging, which is quite an achievement, because it's pretty busy and pretty chaotic, and you still picked this out while you were tasting in the middle of that, didn't you?
Yeah, it really stood out. I think people have been making vermouth type non-alcoholic drinks since the beginning. But I think sometimes it was because it was easier to take a wine type product and flavour it up and call it a vermouth than it was to make a wine. I think there are people who started that way, but the game has completely changed now. And people are out there trying to make vermouths which are the equal of the alcoholic counterparts, and mm-hmm. you know, even better, they're really going after great ingredients. You know, we had products entered where the botanicals were all hand harvested on a Scottish island, didn't we? And well, you know, people have done all sorts of creative things to really get the flavour and the texture and the balance right, and it's really exciting and it stands out. You can really notice it.
Yeah, it looks to me as well. Like we got more products this year where people were playing around with kind of savoury base ingredients rather than it always being about sweet and fruit and this kind of thing. And we had a couple of drinks where they were using kind of like beets and stuff like this as their starting point. And they give a completely different product. And that's a really interesting development. I think we're probably going to get a bit more of that going forward as well, because the judges were intrigued by it when they saw it. So it's one of those ones where you get them in a lineup and people taste them and kind of go, wow, that's different. What's that? Do I like it? Not sure. And they keep coming back to it and going, yeah, actually, this is not like something I've ever tasted before, but I really like it. And I think, you know, that kind of creative, almost artisanal, experimental approach to alcohol-free is a really exciting area. And I think that will probably grow. I mean, it's not going to be people making, you know, tens of thousands of bottles of it. They're mostly at this stage quite small producers, but they're really bringing something new to the occasion. And I think there's people who are deliberately going out and trying to create food-friendly wine-type drinks who are not necessarily just starting with a wine and then de-alcoholising it. And there's a lot of kind of interesting creative stuff going on in, like, we had a few entries from like France and Switzerland and Germany and places like this where it's kind of, you know, ex-sommes who are trying to go out and create something which they would use in a restaurant. And, you know, they're not always completely there yet, but you can see what they're trying to do, and it's a really interesting space.
I love that, the innovation.
Can I jump in?
Yes, please come in, Chrissy.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of add two things to that, and one is that we're just starting to see what I would call the molecular gastronomy approach to making these drinks. So over the last, you know, couple of decades, we've got used to chefs doing really creative and unusual things with food, using ingredients in ways that, you know, we've never thought to use them before. And you can see that approach is coming into the world of alcohol-free drinks. People are making little ferments, they're making infusions, they're taking old tech like drinking vinegars and kind of turning it into new tech, using it to pull the flavors out of things. And I think, as Chris said, some of the drinks are, some of them are delicious. Some of them are very different, very outside our experience of what we're used to drinking. So there's that adventure to have, if you like. But I think there's also a glimmer of some of these techniques just beginning to make their way into more mainstream drinks. So I think, where you're thinking about something like an alcohol-free gin, for instance, or, you know, an equivalent to a gin, an equivalent to some other spirit or a wine, I think there's just beginning to be a movement of people saying, okay, instead of working with off-the-shelf flavor essences that we can buy, or, you know, aroma compounds or whatever, we will do some of this work with ingredients, and, you know, we will make you know, a liquid that has a really interesting flavor and texture, and then we will develop that into a more conventionally styled product. And I think that's partly why some of the drinks that would have got a gold perhaps last year maybe only got a silver this year, because this fast movement is also encompassing this incredibly creative, almost chef style development of the liquids.
It's, and what's interesting, Ollie, as well, is I think you can tell when this is the beauty of a competition where you've got a lineup of kind of 10 drinks that are broadly speaking in a similar category, and they're all being tasted by people who generally know what they're talking about, or genuinely know what they're talking about, I should say. is that you can see the differences between a drink which is good and has been constructed mostly using kind of flavors in a lab, and ones where people have gone the extra mile to create something that's much more artisanal in style, because you just get the extra layers of flavor and you get the extra, quite often, the extra travel through the palate. And you know, when you're used to tasting like top end alcoholic drinks, those are the kind of things that you're looking for, things that kind of unfurl and develop and change and have a story to tell while you're tasting them, rather than something that comes in and gives you a big quick hit and goes, yay, lots of flavor, great, and then kind of just kind of wanders off. And it's really interesting that we're starting to see that level of complexity, and it's, you know, it's equivalent of kind of like fine wine or top spirits. You know, we're starting to see some of that in the best guys here. And there's a kombucha producer who got a couple of golds last year with some of his products, and he got a gold again this year with something completely different. And I think he's the kind of guy, he's a very self-effacing French chap, and you don't think he makes big volumes, but you can see there's a consistency throughout his drinks, however different they are. There's a real craft that goes into making them, and you can't miss it when you see them in a lineup and then you taste them in the glass, and you just think, this, you know, this guy's really got it. Whatever it is, he's got it. And we've got the same with some spirits producers and you know, some beer guys as well, who've done it like repeatedly year after year. And you, the exciting thing for me is that, you know, we've only just started this journey. You know, in 10 years' time, we're going to have seen names and go, they'll be like established right at the pinnacle of alcohol-free. And we'll be able to say, yeah, we found them 10 years ago, and it's been fantastic to watch them take that journey and to see them go. And, you know, at the moment, they're just little guys making something, and they think it's good, but they don't know it's good. And then they come in and they get it and they get a gold medal, and they're absolutely made up. And it's really exciting, you know, seeing those journeys that people are on and where they could get to in like 5 or 10 years time is just fantastic.
You mentioned de-alcoholisation. I'm sure our listeners would be really interested to hear the processes that go on within the various drinks that you've reviewed. Yes, could you sort of take us through how they make these products?
There's not just one process. Okay, so the first thing to say is that the technology of taking alcohol out is also evolving all of the time. But roughly speaking, it usually involves some kind of distillation process under a vacuum is the most kind of common way that it's done. And there are variants of this, but it's a technical way of separating out the alcohol. The other quite common method of, you know, using machinery to do it is something called reverse osmosis, which is more of a more akin to filtering out, in a sense. But we're talking at a molecular level, so it's all to do with the size of the molecules of the different components, and specifically, you know, the alcohol component. So most drinks that start off as alcohol will go through a process like that. So that is mainly wines, the majority of wines, and some beers, and some other products are made that way. I think what's interesting, though, is that there are some other approaches coming along as well. So some people are saying, well, rather than start with alcohol and take it out, we will construct something, we'll build something from sort of the bottom up, which never does have alcohol in it. And they'll do that by blending various things. And that might involve juices, it might involve botanicals, it might involve tea. We see increasingly tea being used to provide the sort of liquid component of various types of drink. And in the past, the challenge with the drinks that were not de-alcoholized was very much about how much sugar they would have if they started with a juice. But both de-alcoholized and drinks that are sort of built from the bottom up, the sugar problem is gradually going away, I think. You know, there were far fewer drinks, even compared with last year, that were just very sweet. And of course, some very sweet drinks are absolutely delicious. We are not, you know, we're not the sugar Nazis. We don't mind if a drink is good. It can be sweet or not sweet. But I think the sweetness has been a challenge for people who want to drink some of these drinks up to now. And it's good to see that people are developing the techniques to make something with the alcohol either removed or never there in the first place, and do it without having a huge amount of sugar.
Brilliant. It's really insightful, isn't it?
Very great answer, Chrissy. Thanks a lot for that. I'm just wondering, given it's the World Alcohol Free Awards, and you've got seven judges from around the world, which is great, how far flung are we talking here? Were there any entries from, you know, particularly interesting places? And also, given that, are there any regions that are kind of almost leading in certain areas here?
Right. So we had 21 countries, or products from 21 countries entered. So I think the most products came from, I've got to get this right, was it UK, US, Australia, and is it Germany, Chrissy? They were the kind of big ones, which you'd sort of expect, because they're the countries which are, and France as well. So those are countries which are where there's obviously a lot going on. I think we got wines from everywhere, all the places you would expect, basically. I think on the basis of the results, you'd probably say Australia's maybe got the most consistent performance in terms of entries to medals. New Zealand's doing good stuff as well. But, you know, like I said, we had really good wines from, you know, across the world. So, you know, Europe, the whole of Europe, US as well. There's obviously a fair bit going on over there. I think the US seems to be quite a lot of RTDs, so kind of pre-mixed cocktail type things. There seems to be a lot of that. A lot of those seem to come in from the States. They're obviously something which they think is going to be popular with their market. We got a lot of really interesting, those kind of the Amaro type drinks that I was telling you about, largely European based, a lot of from sort of Germany, Benelux, those kind of places, seems to be a bit of a hotspot. So different countries have their little areas of interest, I think, but no, it was a very wide ranging set of entries. I think, you know, we'd love to see more from everywhere, of course. Chris, have you got a figure there for us? Have you just rooted some information?
I have just got the figure. So, yes, the top five with not much between them were UK, France, Australia, Germany and the States. Then, yes, it goes on through Canada, Spain, Belgium, Netherlands, etc. South Africa's in there, Denmark, Austria, Ireland, Lithuania. Quite excitingly, Taiwan. We had our first entry from Taiwan. And down at the bottom of the table, but there, Sweden, Greece and Portugal. So, you know, very, very wide range of countries that the products came from.
There's clearly people doing good stuff all over the world, because the countries that Chrissy mentioned down the foot of the table there, they didn't send in many products. But, I mean, there's a guy from Greece who got, was it two golds or a gold and a silver for his vermouth, and they're absolutely banging. You know, they're great drinks. You know, it's not like they're just having a go at it but don't know what they're doing. There's people all over the place who are doing really good stuff. And I think that's kind of what's exciting to us, is seeing how many people are just having a go at this and really doing it intelligently. I think, you know, a lot of this kind of kicked off during lockdown. I think people kind of came around to the idea that they wanted to do something a bit different. They had what they would maybe thought of as a bit of a crazy dream and have a go at it. But actually, people have really focused on it and they're doing it seriously. They're not just, you know, dabbling and messing around with it. There's some really serious efforts being made to do stuff. And like I said, that's coming from all over the world. So what I'd love to see some more or anything from sort of South America, because I'm sure there must be stuff, really weird stuff happening over there, which we'd love to get in with some quirky kind of Latin American varietals and botanicals and stuff. But you know, I think anyone who's listening to this who makes an alcohol-free drink anywhere in the world, send it in, because it'll be fairly judged by people who know what they're talking about. So you can guarantee to get a fair hearing, and you might get a gold.
That's great. Well, thank you for being so generous with your time, and congratulations. And we're only 2 years in, so you know, as you both say, this can only develop, and it's really exciting. I'm getting your passion, and it's making me very excited about where this is going as well. So thank you sincerely.
And of course, listeners can check in and find out who's gold, silver and bronze in all these categories, right?
Yeah.
What's the best way they can do to find that out, guys?
Well, the website has all the results on, and that's www.worldafawards.com. And you can filter them by medal style, by alcohol level. So we only let stuff in that's 0.5% and below. But if you're looking for 0%, you can filter for that. And you can filter by drink style, by country of origin, by brand name. Really easy. So you can look for your favourites, and you can look for new ones to go and look out for and test out with as well. So that's the best way, www.worldafawards.com.
Lovely stuff.
Wonderful.